Good morning and welcome to all of those of you who have just dialed in. We're so excited to have you join us for episode 61 of Coffee with the Coder. And if you just dialed in exactly at 10:09 or 10:10, you saw that you heard the end of our
insider
portion. Yes, I'm sorry, I started to talk and then the wrong word was about to come out. But anyway, the insider portion, so that was very exciting. I appreciated that your position on that, and I will have that ready for replay for insiders on Facebook just as quickly as I possibly can. So before you start in today's questions, let me mention for our audience that there is a webinar on Thursday on critical illness myopathy, which it just sort of sprang up and it got to be a little confusing, and so this session brings in lots of clarity, and I would encourage you to put in your toughest questions when you put in your registration, because if you ask something that's not already covered in the presentation, maybe we can get it answered, provided we have enough time to do that. But so that's the plan. The session is this week on Thursday, starts at noon for just under an hour. And so if you can join us for that, there's an HIMA CEU available if you are there for the correct amount of time. And so we're just excited for that. The session is $99 if you are an organizational subscriber, an individual subscriber, whatever. We have free access to organizational subscribers that pay by the year, so very excited to bring this back again. And did I miss any other announcements, Paula?
I don't think so.
Okay, wonderful. Oh, there's a spring sale. I didn't mention that. Yes. Normally webinars cost more than $99, and the ones in April are only $99, so excited about that too. Yay. So now I'm going to jump right in. I have a question from Heather, who works in inpatient rehab. That's a beautiful name. I know a lot of Heathers who work in inpatient rehab. This is a question regarding the Earth Pie. I'm sorry about that. I apologize. I didn't want to cough on your in the recording. So this question regards the Earth Pie for acute rehab. Section 1, active diagnoses. There are two diagnoses that require a matching code if the box is checked, PVD and PAD, or PAD, and DM, diabetes. Sometimes the patient will have both, and the coder will give a combination code like E11.51. And the coder will say that this code covers both the DM and the PVD, and I'm not real sure about that. Would this combination code, E11.51, be enough to support the checked box for PVD? In my most recent case, I asked for secondary code, I70.2X, but the coder said there wasn't enough documentation to support the use of that second code.
Yeah. So E1151, let's talk about what the definitions are first. E1151 is diabetes with diabetic peripheral angiopathy without gangrene. This one code associates the PVD and the diabetes, so two codes are not needed. So absolutely, that one code would be enough to check the box to say the patient has PVD, and you're talking about on the Earth Pie, there's a box to identify that the patient has PVD and or diabetes, and you would check that box. Now, I agree with your coder that I70.2X, and X meaning whatever digit, for the laterality, is for, and let me give you the definition, is for atherosclerosis of the native arteries of the extremities. And not only does the E1151 tell the whole story and reflect a different severity of illness, so it's more intense, it associates the diabetes to the condition, than if the coder were to report the straight-up diabetes, E11.9, and either the code you've mentioned or the unspecified PVD code, which is I73.9, separately. The coder understands probably that when these conditions are stated in the record, the physician says diabetes and they also say PVD. Our directions tell us to automatically associate those conditions and to report the combination code. So the fact that you have that one code on the Earth Pie does allow you to report, you know, to check the boxes that the patient has diabetes and PVD. Also, just as a sidebar, this really is not, since we're not going to consider coding the I70.2X right now, based on what you've stated in the scenario, it's likely that the physician wasn't specific enough, and based on what the coder is saying too, wasn't specific enough to report the I-70 code either. It doesn't look like they identified the condition related to a specific leg, or that it was, you know, in the native arteries rather than a graft. So when the physician says PVD alone and doesn't give us any more specific diagnosis, we're going to report I-73.9. But in this case, the I-73.9 is, if you will, bundled in that E11.51, and it tells the whole story that it is that the PVD is associated to the diabetes. So the answer to your question is yes, it is enough, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, ICD-10 helps us sometimes. This next question is from Linda, who's also in an inpatient rehab. She says, when a physician documents resolving or improving to a diagnosis, so maybe encephalitis resolving or myopathy improving, does this require a query to clarify that it's an active diagnosis? Is there some sort of coding clinic or coding guideline that says when a query is required? Linda says, I'm an RN and a CDI, and I haven't come across this. If a query is required, physician education and a query process will need to be developed.
Yeah, I agree there, Linda. Here's how I look at those, and let me just say that when I educate docs, oftentimes we get into the conversation about how to document those conditions, you know, because we tell them if it is resolved, you're not going to report it. And that's the same for whether it's inpatient rehab or acute care, acute inpatient hospital or, you know, even outpatient services. If it's resolved, we're not reporting it. If the physician uses the terminology resolving and there is no treatment for the condition or there's no way in which you could tell it impacted treatment, and I'll state that a little bit differently in just a minute, of course, I'm going to query the physician. Remember, our goal is to catch the severity of illness of the patient. If they do have the condition and it is resolving with continued treatment, meaning when you're, even though he's stating resolving, and I know oftentimes docs don't associate the treatment to the diagnosis when they state it, and that tends to be problematic from a coding perspective. But if they state resolving and they clearly identify that there's continued treatment, there's utilization of resources, there might be an extension of the length of stay, or they in some way tell how that condition impacted the stay or the treatment, then we're going to report it. If there's none of that, if there's no treatment, no resource utilization, no extension of the length of stay, and no documented impact, then, of course, you're not going to report that condition. But I would say because he used the term resolving, that would cause confusion if there was no, you know, other impact or indication how it impacted the stay. So in that situation, a query would absolutely be appropriate and education, as you indicate, to validate with the physician that the condition existed and associate the treatment to it. So a query for a status of condition might be, you know, I would give you an example as I would ask the questions of, you know, your options to the physician could be the diagnosis was present during the admission and is now resolved. The diagnosis is present. The diagnosis is ruled out. The diagnosis is suspected, likely, or probable. Or give them an option to say something else. Or give them the option to mark, you know, unable to determine. Remember, in the IRF setting specifically, unconfirmed diagnoses, even though it's an option, are not reported in the IRF setting or in the outpatient setting, you know, outpatient physician visits, things like that, but they can be reported in the acute hospital. So I would say if there is conflicting information of whether the diagnosis is treated or impacting treatment in some way, those indications that are identified to us, you know, why we report a condition based on ICD-10 guidelines, then I would query. If there is treatment or there is clear documentation that it's impacting treatment in some way and he says resolving, then I would report it. So there you go.
Thank you. Thank you. Do we have time for you to talk to us about that other thing you mentioned?
I just want to real quickly, we'll go over just a few minutes, but just real quickly, this was a client called and asked a question this week, and I just wanted to share it with you guys because it was a great question, and it may happen. And this client was also in a rehab. They wanted to know if the patient was admitted to rehab, and this is a scenario that happened. And 6 days later in the team conference, one of the team members, a therapist, indicated the reason for the admission and the focus of care documented was incorrect. The patient was originally placed in the rehab with documentation of debility due to pneumonia, influenza, UTI that was present at admission, and acute on chronic hypoxic respiratory failure. Now, the patient was put into IGC 10.9, which is other respiratory, and the documentation indicated that the acute on chronic respiratory failure was the etiologic. The pre-screen indicates, in addition to these issues, that the patient has a chronic left lower extremity paralysis complicating surgical repair of a triple A. The HMP and the post-admission physician eval and the initial progress notes make no mention of the paralysis, but following team conference 6 days later, the progress notes on the next day indicates the patient has debility for thoracic spine infarct and associated weakness with spasticity exacerbated by the acute pneumonia, UTI, and influenza. It's an Asia D. The physician creates addendums to the HMP, team conference, and progress notes indicating the spinal cord infarct and residual monophoresis. Should the IGC be changed to 04.130? So originally it was a respiratory case, and now they want to change it to 4.130. Okay, so here are the thought processes. And I talked to some clinical reviewers, too. The thought processes on this situation is that, you know, this doesn't happen often, first of all, which, yay. But second of all, our guidelines for, you know, completing the IRF PI and for, you know, making sure that our cases are appropriate, we have until the fourth day to determine which group the patient should be in. So if I am going strictly by the guidelines, it would not be appropriate to change the IGC in this case. Now, the difficult thing is, because, you know, you've got several people seeing the patient on the front end, it's what do we do to ensure this doesn't happen in the future, that we know what our focus of care is on the front end. Well, the fact that you've got therapists, you know, looking, and nurses looking at those patients on the front end, getting those FIM scores, you know, evaluating how the patient is managing. Within the first 3 days, that's our opportunity to gather that information about why we're treating the patient and to look at our focus of care. Our plan of care is already written prior to that time as well, so that's where we have to go on. If you are changing it after that fact, that's going to, you know, provide a risk. So I had one other case that was similar to this where the rehab doc took a patient in, and he brought the patient in, you know, kind of under, I think it was a debility if I recall, but then as the patient was in the facility, the treatment wouldn't change, the focus of treatment wouldn't change, but he actually dug down and diagnosed a different condition. And it was his stance that, you know, this patient had this condition all along, we just didn't recognize it until almost the end, so I'm going to stand on this and I'm going to report it. It's still not recommended, but it's going to be a decision that you have to make in your own facilities and realize that the risk exists that, you know, they could come back on review and say, nope, this is not the way it's supposed to be, and change that. But again, if you feel like you have enough, you know, information to support it, then again, that's something that you have to decide internally. Pam?
Thank you. Okay, so now I got to mug somebody. This is fun. Today we're giving away an official Coffee with the Coder coffee mug, tea mug, whatever you want to drink in it, with our branding all over it, and it will go to one of the two people who sent in a non-anonymous question. So I am stirring up the names on my desk, and I am going to open it up and see. The winner is Linda. So, Linda, I'm going to reach out to you and find out where to send your mug. Congratulations. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and dial in again in 2 weeks. Now, we'll be happy to text you and let you know if you'll reach out to us with your text number and ask for it, or just get on our mailing list and just tell your friends to join us for Coffee with a Coder. Have a wonderful Monday.